Welcome back to Tech Hygiene. We help you stay sane in a crazy world. Say hi to your hosts, John Biggs and Lauren Feldman.
Welcome back to Tech Hygiene, a podcast about staying sane in an increasingly insane online world. I'm John Biggs.
I'm Lauren Feldman.
And there are a few topics that we have. NFTs are the big thing, Lauren. You're a big NFT head now, right? You're digitizing your DNA and selling it online.
Close to.
Yeah.
I'm definitely following this. Disclaimer. I'm advising a company, Rare.Market, that's involved in this space. And as we discussed in the last show, I'm very interested in this space. For a lot of reasons. There's been a lot of crazy activity. Grimes put up 6 pieces or 10 pieces mm-hmm. and sold $6-7 million worth of art instantly. In this sports space, it's really heating up. There was something at one of the sports brokers, I believe a basketball-based product, that sold for quite a bit of money.
Yeah, yeah, that was the Hot Shots or whatever it was called. Like you right. could buy like a.
It was like buy a, like a. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, you buy like a trading card of like the plays, right? So it's that's an interesting thing too.
Yeah, it's really going to be important, NFTs in the sports memorabilia market, especially with trading cards. That's obvious. So it's, you know, it's a really big market. It's a really big market, and I know at the moment it seems like it's just tied in a way to, you know, a crypto play, and that's certainly part of it. But there's a lot of interesting things potentially that could happen in that space of meaning, which mm-hmm. is what me and you are always looking for here on Tech Hygiene.
So, I mean, in terms of meaning, so the idea, I would agree with you to a degree. This is something that's cool, but in terms of meaning, the idea is that digital art becomes as important as physical art.
I think potentially it can, and will. I think potentially it can and will. Here's an example. Somebody has a Ming vase.
Yeah.
Right. Or some sculpture in their house, a Calder mobile or something, you know, something cool. And they digitize it. They make a 3D object of mm-hmm. that one of a kind thing. That original thing could get broken, is just in their house, isn't shared, can't be shared. So the way it used to be with a piece of art is that some rich dude would buy it and bring it to his house.
Yeah, and he'd leave it there. And nobody would see it.
Except him and his friends. And if he wanted to, he'd give it to a museum, right? So I think that possibility exists to do that again, where a person gets a piece of media. They could either choose to keep it for themselves, you know, just keep it in their house, show the movie or play the album or show the picture just to their friends. They could share it, or they could distribute it on YouTube and quote unquote, that's a museum sort of for them. So I don't know. I think it brings up a lot of interesting questions. I think it empowers artists again. We'll see what happens with it.
I was really into during the Iraqi wars and when the ISIS and all that other crazy stuff was happening. The museum curators in Syria and these right. different places were actually digitizing the right. images or digitizing right. the objects because they right. knew that they would be destroyed
right.
By zealots.
Right.
And I mean, so that cuts both ways, right? So to a degree, you could basically say, okay, I'm going to 3D digitize this picture of this statue of the Confederate soldier on the front of like the Knoxville County, whatever city hall, before they tear it down. And kind of enshrine it in memory in that sense.
I think that's good and important. And that's in, you know, you're talking about like the public, you know, public artwork. And then you could do the same with private artwork, where somebody has a one-of-one sculpture, mm-hmm. and they digitize that. And then they can, you know, instead of making that digitized version public, put the one-of-one digitized version of their object AR, right, as an NFT, and some dude buys it, and now he can put it on the table in his room, and now the only people in the world who have that is the original physical artifact owner, and now the digital.
That's and you put it in your digital room, right?
Well, you can put it in your real room. You can deliver the object as an image. Or you can deliver it as an AR image as well. So yes,
or you as a 3D printed model, and you basically sell the model for X million dollars.
Well, I don't want to. No, and you see, can make it yourself. Well, no, that draws the line, and
But you can print it yourself, all by yourself. You know what I
mean?
Well,
you could do a physical, yeah, but that would be lame, I think, as an artistic object. But sure, if the person who has the 3D image wants to make it out of plastic, you know.
Yeah, but that can be, and this is getting esoteric. I don't think we're not an art podcast, but I think the concept that you love about this is that it's one of one.
Yes.
If I sell an STL file, which is basically it's a file that you use to print 3D print objects.
Yes.
I sell an STL file of my art. And I say it has to be printed in this way. It can be printed on any out of any plastic, but it has to be printed at 5 inches tall.
I love that idea. And that, you know, the object of art itself is the plan. And then having, you know, the buyer actually build it. I love that too. I think that, you know, plays, you know, why it's interesting to me, you know, why the whole space is interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a really interesting question artistically that you just brought up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the question. Yeah, that's a
is so
that's
is that
fascinating
is,
concept.
Right. And is that art? Of course it is. Like what you just described is totally art and totally heavy and totally cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I really, you know, at least to me. And that's what, again, interests me about this whole space is, you know, the artistic questions and what it means to be an artist. What is art? What is a collector? What all that means, you know, moving forward.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's end the art podcast part, I guess, like you said. But it's interesting. Yeah. They're definitely big sales. That Soulja Boy, who's apparently a big rap guy, what's interesting about him is he just sold a single with all the commercial rights to the song as well.
Well, he was a big rap guy. So this is interesting. So I don't want to keep harping on this, but he was, you remember Soulja Boy, do whatever. What was his song?
I just know the name. He was famous.
Song. Okay. He had one song that was like pretty big. Soulja Boy, Tell Him. Crank that, Soulja Boy. So he did one song, maybe a couple. What the hell do I know about Soulja Boy per se? But he did that one song, Crank That, that was really popular back in 2009, and he's still, I guess he's still got his residuals. He's still making a little bit of money on that. And similar to like MC Hammer and these guys who kind of had some money and they want to invest it in something new. And that's kind of giving his career a second wind, because Soulja Boy is, and then you could say that about like the guy from EMC, right? The or Jesus Jones or any one of these bands from back in the olden days. It just gives him a goose. So that's something to think about. Anyway, all right. So next up we got Gab. Gab essentially lost 70 gigabytes of its data. And apparently it's mostly just text and like emails, email accounts and everything, but it's a pretty big hack. And apparently the only reason why they pulled it off is that the CTO coded the whole thing wrong.
So you can basically
watch it. Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, apparently some of the data that was hacked is salacious in nature. Mm-hmm. That's what the word on the street is.
So he got in. So there's a...
And it's especially fitting because I believe that this is Torber, right?
Yeah.
Andrew yeah. Torber. So he became like, or was, or became more public with being like a batshit crazy evangelical, mm-hmm. sort of like religious tones to everything. It's creepy. Well, as if it wasn't creepy enough before.
Yeah. I distinctly remember Torber. Torber was writing. He was a journalist, tech journalist for a little while. He was a heavy commenter on TechCrunch. I remember he would pop up and he emailed me once and he says, "Hey, we got this new thing called Gab. I wanted to show it to you." And I said, "Oh, well, it looks like Reddit again. I'm not really into it." And he just kind of like, and that was it. And then it turns into like this whole free speech thing. So it's clearly like this, it's clearly like the supervillain thing when nobody pays attention to him, nobody wants to give him time of day. So he becomes evil. And in his own mind, he's doing the right thing because he's fighting against he's back against the man. But in this case, the man is, I don't know, sanity and I don't know, everything good. But it's interesting to watch. And so apparently they submitted a GitHub change to the code that's this thing is based on. So he based this whole thing on Mastodon, which is an open source social media thing, which is like Twitter or Facebook, and you can just basically use it to make your own open source social media object, anything you want. And all you have to do is just add or update it or whatever. And apparently they uploaded the wrong, they did the wrong thing. And they allowed for SQL injection.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. So they
the famous SQL injection.
Yeah. It's a, it's,
that's been
it's,
a, that's an oldie, but a goodie.
Yeah, you like the SQL injection.
Yeah.
So always. basically they were able to dump everything. It's so silly. And it's so ridiculous that these guys scale so fast and so big, and they scale with hubris. So I think the answer here is that if you want to be a startup guy and you want to scale, you got to scale big, but you got to scale slowly. Whereas these guys were like, "Oh, I got a million people. We got to get 2 million more people on. So you better scale as quickly as possible," and you miss the big holes that you've just built into your system.
I got a tip on the user end of things, mm-hmm. with Gab. If you don't want to go to prison, don't use Gab.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because God knows what the feds have on all those lunatics, and having experience with those lunatics on a firsthand level, you can't believe what these guys are really like what they're saying in chats. And I mean, the world knows at this point, but God knows what the feds have on all those guys.
The landing page for code.gab.com, the password for the March 2021 release to access it is "Jesus Christ is King. Trump won the election."
Yeah, there you go.
This is the odd thing. I don't know how much of this is a goof.
Well, it doesn't matter if it's a goof. Speaking of which, that tape of Alex Jones came out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, is he a goof? It doesn't matter if it's a goof. It's still damaging and batshit crazy. Even if Alex Jones is in on his own joke, which he obviously is, the fact that you're such a sociopath and would want to be so that deceitful and mm-hmm. that insane, even playing a character, quote unquote, makes you that character.
But what about let's go to like Andy Kaufman, for example.
Okay. Andy Kaufman's work was positive and just weird.
Okay. He
wasn't telling people, you know, hypnotizing people to do crazy shit at the same time trying to sell them fucking drugs. So it's like, it's a moot comparison.
I mean, but 100%, I agree. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Andy Kaufman was one of the good guys, and he was a comedian.
And he entertainer.
Yeah,
like what normal entertainer? That's their shtick.
At what point I think the first type of this kind of like insult comic, I mean, I go who like,
well, I'll cut to it since this is my spot, right?
Okay.
So the most craziest aggressive playing a character.
Andrew Dice Clay.
Correct. So even Dice at his worst, even his biggest haters at his worst understood that he was a comic and his intent wasn't trying to hypnotize people, you know, and then sell them supplements. It's, you know, it's, that's the difference between the arts and being Joseph Goebbels. You know what I'm saying? Like, you cannot like his shtick, but he was playing in the realm of shtick.
Okay. Yeah, I get it. I didn't want to become the devil's advocate here, but to
no, agree, please that, had, be the devil's advocate, and that's how I answer it.
But I want to understand if this is a goof for Andrew Torba. If all this stuff is so deeply held,
I don't think it is. I think he's genuinely crazy. I think Alex Jones rationalizes him being genuinely crazy, where he envisions himself as a Kaufman-esque character without, you know, having the talent, the understanding, the anything.
Yeah, the comic timing, the
Not even in the same realm. He's delusional even by the comparison makes him delusional.
At what point does the artist flip? You know what I mean? At what point am I Alex Jones on Austin Radio?
Here you go. Here's the example of artist who like completely flipped. Roseanne.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect example.
I'm not saying flip in terms of insanity. I'm turning flip in seeing that the talent is not enough and I have to do this weirdness just to get by.
I think that, you know, that would be new breed of YouTubers, Logan Paul, Jake Paul types. My Roseanne example is, you know, I thought you were more talking about of an artist who, you know, kind of lost their mind and got caught up in that whole other thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, bottom feeder guys who are always just looking for attention, those are the newcomers, you know, Alex Jones and, you know, people of that quote unquote stature, you know, we were discussing whether or not they really believe their own shtick or not. The young kids, I don't think they believe anything. I don't think they care. I don't think they've thought about art, meaning, philosophy, anything. It's just YouTube views and that's it.
See, that was exactly my point here. So, and we don't have to belabor this point. Like we were also belaboring the art thing, but at some point the mind of the artist, quote unquote, has to flip and become convinced of its own bullshit. And the reason for that is because your audience has already been convinced of that bullshit. So you basically have to follow them along or you lose.
And you have to keep cranking out your own bullshit. And that's why you see so many of these nitwits getting depressed or fucked up or on drugs or shooting themselves or this or that. You know, I mean, it's horrible. I mean, it's horrible as an artist even doing real work all the time. I mean, that's why so many people like, actors like would hate a TV show. You know,
there's this guy, Nick Accotto. Have you ever seen this guy?
No, I don't know the name at least.
Oh my God. And this is an example of somebody who went completely, who sacrificed themselves to a degree. So this guy, Nick Accotto he used to be like a skinny kid who used to play, violin on YouTube.
Okay.
And he came out recently. I don't know what his latest videos are. I don't think he's been doing any latest videos. He gained like 100 pounds and all he does is this mukbang stuff, which is him talking for an hour about something and eating like a massive thing of like flaming hot Cheetos pasta.
Yeah. You know what? I forgot where it was, some article about some chick who like eats lobster and eats crab legs. Like it's some weird subgenre.
Yeah. Oh my God. This is so gross. And I'm looking at it now and it's such a strange, and he just sits there and eats this stuff and they just eat and eat and eat. It's like, he's a full like baking tray of like flaming hot Cheetos and they're just going to eat this crap. But if we're going to argue that everything that these guys are doing is some form of art, this is performance art to an audience that sucks this up.
But I'm not arguing that. That's part of my whole discussion, and what I find of interest is, what is art? You know, and some guy eating a baking tray of Fritos, who just started making videos 3 months ago.
Well, he's got 2 million views.
I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't care.
But he's got an audience. People are.
I don't care. I don't care.
Oh yes. So okay.
Gatekeepers and art critics. Yeah. Those are going to come back too. And you know what? I'm into it.
True. True.
I mean, you know, the guy on the skateboard with the cranberry juice, God bless him. I'm glad he made $1 million, but don't fucking tell me it's a piece of art. Don't for a second tell me that's an artist. That's a guy that I'm happy got lucky doing a shtick. Yeah. And there you go. And that, in essence, is how I see it. And, you know, I don't give a fuck how many views Logan Paul has or people like that. You know, I don't care. Don't tell me what art is. I'll tell you what art is. I'll have other people tell me what art is. But it's certainly not that.
Right,
and again, you know, they're successful and cool and all of that. Let them make money. They have fans. But don't tell me it's fucking art, because it's not.
It's not. All right. All right. This has been Tech Hygiene, the art episode. Very deep, deep stuff here. I'm John Biggs.
I'm Laurent.
Tech Hygiene brought to you by Typewriter.
Yeah, Laurent.
Typewriter is your on-demand editor, and their amazing team of writers will make your book chapter, blog post, or email shine. Typewriter editors come from places like TechCrunch, Gizmodo, and the New York Times, and they offer low bulk rates for longer work. Check it out at typewriter.plus. That's typewriter.plus.